A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, a big thank you to the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank. It is summertime in downtown Milwaukee. It's summer all over. The heart of the swimming season, right? Now, truly, if I'm thinking what I'm going to do after the show, it's going swimming probably isn't high on my list. That's just not, it's not what I do. I love swimming, but it's not what I do for fitness, and that's okay. And I don't even know if, I don't think it's even truly legal for me to go walk down the street and jump into the Milwaukee River and go for a swim. But maybe that's the point of the show today. It got me thinking about how much our waterways have changed, no matter where you live. Now, I spent years living in downtown Milwaukee, from my time through Marquette to our condos on the river. And I always used to love like looking out on the Milwaukee River because I kind of had this front row seat to the Riverwalk, all the redevelopment, like the steady revival of the river itself. And I remember like looking out over time, year over year, you'd see kayaks. Then the next summer, you'd see a few more kayaks. And then the next year, you'd see paddle boards. And then you'd see people on paddle boards without the wetsuit. I'm like, wow, we've kind of made it. Like, this is it. But the water itself has changed through the years. It's got clearer and clearer, in some ways closer to being even swimmable. And that's why this whole idea of swimmable cities is so fascinating to me. No matter where you are in our great state of Wisconsin, like there's likely a river or a lake or a pond or whatever nearby. So you want those access points into the water to be swimmable. So what if we could take more time to make waterways safe and accessible and part of our everyday life again? We're going to have a conversation with Cheryl Nen from Milwaukee Riverkeeper. Cheryl is the leading voice on restoring and reimagining urban waterways, and she's going to tell us everything that's happening, especially here in downtown Milwaukee, on the Milwaukee River, the Menominee River, the Kinnickinnick River, what it could mean for communities across the state for Milwaukee to become a truly swimmable city. It's also Bastille Days weekend. You got a couple more days today and tomorrow to get down to Easttown. It is buzzing for sure. It's a wonderful festival. I did the Storm the Bastille run, the big 5K on Thursday night. I'm kind of happy to say I can still do that run. It's always super fun. One of the favorite traditions in my great Milwaukee summer. You know, it's another great tradition. Two up. So we're going to take some time right now to go two up.
Now it's time for the two up on the upswing.
Two things in the business and community world that I'm seeing that you need to know about right now. Two of Milwaukee's neighboring suburbs are officially in the business of working smarter, not harder. What does that mean? Well, let me tell you. Back in February, Wauwatosa and West Allis voted to merge their fire departments into a joint agency called the Milwaukee Metro Fire Rescue. Now, just a few months later, Wauwatosa has secured nearly $23 million in state grant funding as a direct result of the move. Here's how it works. Wisconsin created this $300 million State Innovation Fund. It's a program that rewards cities and counties and tribes that consolidate services and cut costs. Wauwatosa is going to receive $4.5 million a year for 5 years. West Allis is in line for a similar payout. And on top of that, the grant money, it's like a third part of the study, found that the merger is going to save both cities almost $7 million over 5 years. No layoffs, no fire stations closed, just smarter operations. That's what it's all about. The new department is set to be fully operational by January 1st, 2027. And they're going to share a dispatch center. They're going to find leadership and training and the start for a search for a new unified fire chief is already on this summer. If you look at the similar models, you go back to the North Shore back in like the 1990s, seven municipalities, including Shorewood, Glendale, Brown Deer, and Whitefish Bay all came together to form the North Shore Fire and Rescue. So 2 decades later, the Wisconsin Policy Forum found that that partnership saved those communities $2.8 million. So this isn't just good news. It's, I think, really smart government, and it's government doing its job. Next up, let's talk a little bit of World Cup. I do the laundry in the Sherman household, and trust me, I find a lot of socks that have holes in them. So I'm watching the World Cup this week, and I'm seeing, like, on the back, the ankles of a lot of players, there are all these holes in socks. Have you noticed this? More and more players are taking scissors to their socks. They're showing up with these hacked up calves, the big holes near their ankles. It's not just a fashion statement. A lot of people are thinking, oh, yeah, this is like some TikTok thing. No. Here's the reason why. Like, the match socks for players are a whole lot more thicker and tighter these days and more compression. So actually, a lot of the players are saying, I don't want that extra squeeze or that pressure point. So they're cutting these little circles out of their socks. It's not a trend. It's this like DIY thing that the players in the World Cup are doing to keep blood flowing and calves happy. Now, something tells me that someone's going to take this idea and like put it online and start selling World Cup socks with holes in them. We'll see if that happens. But for now, when you're watching the rest of the World Cup and you see holes in the socks, this is exactly why it's happening. Coming up next, a frontline scientist advocate and longtime community connector who's helping put Milwaukee's rivers on the regional and global stage. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Today we are diving into a big hopeful story for Milwaukee's future. Our city has officially joined the Global Swimmable Cities Alliance, a movement focused on making urban rivers and lakes cleaner, safer, more accessible for everyone. Joining me in studio, someone who's been on the front lines for sure for this work for years, Cheryl Nen with Milwaukee Riverkeeper. Cheryl's part of the International Waterkeeper Alliance Network, more than 2 decades in watershed science and public engagement. You've helped build a large coalition of partners working to restore our waterways to more swimmable, more fishable, more drinkable. Just fascinating work, and I appreciate you taking time out of your day to be here, Cheryl.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's just start with the basics. What's the Swimmable Cities Alliance, and what does it mean now that Milwaukee is a part of it?
Yeah, so the Swimmable Alliance is a global alliance really promoting, you know, what we say, clean, safe, accessible waterways, swimmability, resilience. And it's really just an urban swimming movement that's really moved, you know, is internationally. It was launched before the Olympics in Paris. There was a lot of conversation at that time that they were moving all of the swimming events to the Seine River. And since that time, it's really grown to over 237 organizations across 116 cities and 37 countries. But it's really an alliance that's come together around, I think, knowledge exchange and kind of building a community of practice. And a lot of that work is, you know, supporting kind of policy initiatives, long-term financing for improving waterfronts, improving swimmability, and essentially pilot projects and also like support for things like real-time monitoring that just make sure that we're, that we're being accountable to the public and making sure that the waters are safe to swim in.
So what are the other Great Lakes cities that are in the coalition?
It's a good question. You know, there aren't a lot of them. I think Ottawa is part of it, Sheboygan, Wisconsin as well. I thought that Toronto was as well.
But I think
it's still a fairly a growing early movement. It's really started in Europe, and so it was a really strong movement in Europe in particular. I think in part because a lot of European cities, especially a lot of the great European cities that you go to, they don't have, you know, they don't have the luxury of having like a Lake Michigan, a beautiful inland lake, you know, or, and a lot of them aren't on the ocean either. So they really only have their urban rivers for swimming. And I think especially given, you know, climate change and a lot of like, you know, we've had this horrible heat snap in the last few weeks, not only here in the U.S., but also in Europe. I think there's like been nearly like 100 people that have drowned, you know, Many people, I think over 1,000 people have died as of these like big heat snaps in Europe. And so they really, you know, need to use those rivers too, just for, you know, for cooling off.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, really their main resources in a lot of those towns are their rivers. And so I think a lot of this kind of urban swimming movement started in Europe.
Makes sense. I mean, Milwaukee's a very European feeling city, so it makes sense that we're in the coalition.
Yeah.
So what are we as a community, as a city, actually committing to by joining the alliance?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it's largely like an alliance around, you know, networking and kind of information gathering and supporting each other. I mean, I think they do have a goal for like 30 cities worldwide that would be swimmable by 2030. Mm. I don't know if Milwaukee will be one of those. They want like 300 cities to be moving on the swimmable journey, so to speak.
Okay.
And I think we're probably more in that bucket. But I think the city is really committed to, you know, I think capitalizing on a lot of our past and current water quality improvement efforts and you know, really building a plan moving forward for getting us to swimmable water. And I think that's something we're really interested in is, you know, I think creating an action plan for where do we go in the future to continue, you know, forward momentum around our rivers being swimmable.
We're talking with Cheryl Nen from Milwaukee Riverkeeper. Your title?
Yes.
Is literally Riverkeeper. Which is so cool. So how do you go from studying environmental issues and water to literally becoming the person that keeps the rivers?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I have a bachelor's in biology and a master's in natural resource ecology and management. And I think prior to moving to Milwaukee, I worked for the city of New York. I worked for Michigan Department of Natural Resources. I worked for the U.S. Forest Service. I did Peace Corps. I've kind of was really moving around doing a lot of, you know, I think natural resource management and conservation biology. And then when I moved here to Milwaukee, I moved here originally to do some Forest Service consulting and then really quickly essentially joined Friends of Milwaukee's Rivers, which is now Milwaukee Riverkeeper. And I've been there 23 years. And my title, you know, I think when I first started, I was doing maybe a little bit more natural area management and planning. And we joined a larger coalition called Waterkeeper Alliance, which is essentially a global alliance that's in 42 different countries now. And essentially, there are people who, you know, are a voice for the waterways. And I, you know, as part of joining that alliance, and that actually happened before I came on, you know, we committed as an organization to having a river keeper. And that's essentially someone who identifies sources of pollution, responds to community concerns, and then works with a lot of partners to address problems that are affecting the rivers. And so it's been my job for 23 years, and I've been really lucky to have it. I think my whole history, I was kind of working around the water. And the water was always a big part of my job, but I was, you know, maybe doing things kind of more forest management, or I was studying frogs and trout species, and I've always kind of been doing watery things. So it ended up becoming like a really great fit because, you know, one of the best things that you can do to protect the water is really protecting the land.
Yeah.
And once we get pollution in the water, it's very expensive to remove.
We'll be right back. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, thank you, Horicon Bank. All the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank, we appreciate your support. So you've emphasized kind of over and over, like the swimmability starts with clean water.
I mean,
that's kind of a natural baseline, right? So what are some of the most important like clean water efforts that are underway right now, whether that's sewage treatment upgrades or stormwater improvements or green infrastructure?
Yeah.
What are some of the things that your organization is looking at?
It's really all of those things. So I think, you know, we are building really here on, you know, decades and decades of sewage treatment plant improvements. I think when I came onto the organization early on, we had several lawsuits against the sewage district. And at that time, they were having like 50 overflows of sewage a year into the waterways. And, you know, I think MMSD has done a tremendous job over the last few decades, you know, working with DNR, working with a lot of groups like ours and improving their operations. And they're now down to about 2 sewage overflows a year. And so, you know, there's been incredible progress in sewage treatment, which is really important. Likewise, I think, you know, a lot of our cities and the sewage district as well have put a lot of money into that green infrastructure, which is super important to really cleaning up a lot of the polluted runoff running from our cities. But we still have a lot lot of work there that we need to do that we can build on. And, you know, we've done a pretty good job, too, of really ratcheting down the pollution coming from industry, which historically has been a big, you know, a big issue in a lot of our waterways. We have a lot of legacy pollution in the waters. So that's all work, I think, that we is really kind of a base of where we're starting. And, you know, we have a really exciting project coming up, which is the area of concern work. We've spent about probably...
And that's at the intersection of the three major rivers, right? It's the Milwaukee, the Menominee, and the Kinnickinnick rivers where it all comes together, correct?
Correct, yeah. And that program does go a little bit further upstream into the different parts of our three watersheds. We've spent about $100 million already doing some targeted dredging, I'd say, over the last decade. But we're going to be spending collectively, it's essentially a $450 million project that's going to be happening over the next 5 to 7 years. And a big part of that involves dredging really that historical pollution that's at the bottom of the river from about 6.5 miles of the Milwaukee River, and it's about 2 miles of the Menominee and 2 miles of the Kinnickinnick. And so that work, which will probably start in 2028, kind of starting on the upper portions of the Milwaukee, kind of downstream of the former Estabrook Dam and moving down. You know, that work will probably take about 5 to 7 years to get it done. It's a large EPA, DNR, you know, kind of coalition project. But we'll really, I think, is going to be removing a lot of that contamination that's been sitting down at the bottom of the river, in some cases since before we even had a Clean Water Act. Stuff's been down there since the founding.
That's really a generational cleanup effort.
It is a generational cleanup effort. And I think, and really, you know, we still have a lot of work to do on, you know, certainly with climate change as well. We need to, you know, readdress how we're managing our wastewater, how we're managing our stormwater, be a little bit more aggressive there. But I think, you know, also removing a lot of this legacy pollution is going to, I think, set us in a really good place to move toward that swimmable goal.
With all of the beach and river lake cleanups that you and your organization have done through the years, you've probably noted that a vast majority of the trash is plastic-based, right?
Yep.
Are you still seeing that? And what's the scale of that plastic problem when you look at it from a real hyper-local lens here in, like, greater downtown Milwaukee?
Yeah. So, you know, that plastic, and in particular, like, single-use plastic, is really the majority of the pollution that we're still pulling out of the rivers and river cleanups and beach cleanups. And the problem with it is a lot of it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, it doesn't completely go away. Styrofoam, too, is kind of a type of plastic, and it very easily breaks up, as we all know, and just becomes smaller and smaller, and until it looks like something that to a fish looks like an egg or something that they can eat, and then they do eat it. And so, you know, we know that it's getting into the fish. Like, almost all of the fish studies that have been done in the last, you know, 5 or so years have found plastic in the bellies of a lot of our fish. You know, and so it's getting into the fish and wildlife. We also, like, you know, as people are eating about a credit card sized amount of plastic each week, which is kind of horrifying to think about. But it is getting into our water, getting into our food supply, you know, into our beer shop, you know, which is horrifying. and so, you know, there's a lot of work that we need to do to address that. We have a Plastic-Free Milwaukee Coalition.
Okay.
That's a large coalition of, like, you know, City of Milwaukee, County of Milwaukee, a lot of businesses that are, you know, committing to be, like, lake-friendly by, you know, minimizing their use or eliminating their use of single-use plastic. And, you know, it's just a giant educational effort, too, around how people can change their behaviors to minimize the amount of plastic that we're all using. I mean, I would say, you know, probably, you know, well over, like, 80% of the stuff that we're pulling out of the rivers is plastic. And so it's a big issue. It looks like on the Great Lakes level and the federal level, they're kind of mulling even different, like, standards for microplastics because they're becoming such a big issue. And so, you know, I think we're going to see a lot more of work to remove that in the future.
We're talking with Cheryl Nen of Milwaukee Riverkeeper. Cheryl, I know you've helped create and maintain the Milwaukee Urban Water Trail, where you map kind of the legal and safe access points for people for paddling, for fishing, whatever we may be doing on our waterways. What are a couple of the access points and the stretches of the river here that you're most excited about right now? And how does the river really work to change how we interact with our neighborhoods?
Yeah, it's all good. Good question. So, well, we have our water trail is called the Milwaukee Urban Water Trail. And if you can find more information at mkeurbanwatertrail.org or also on our website at milwaukeeriverkeeper.org. And that has all of the locations around roughly about 60 miles of river, which is the lower portions of the Milwaukee mostly, and then also some of the Menominee and Kinnickinnick. And there are also lakefront access points as well. So, you know, I think that we feel really strongly that, you know, we aren't going to be able to clean up our rivers if people don't love them, if they're not using them. And we need, you know, we also, the more people we get out onto the water means more people that will help us be stewards of the resource. So, we started that in about 2006 and are continuing to kind of do new iterations. I'm working on one now, just to let people know how they can safely and legally access the waters. There's a lot of really great access points downtown. And as you know, they're changing too based on, you know, businesses that are going in and out of business. And so we've had a few that we've lost businesses along the river. And so those launches are kind of in flux. But, you know, there's really great ones that like the Rowing Club is really wonderful, especially for folks that are using canoes and kayaks. Lakefront Brewery has a great launch. Screaming Tuna has a great launch. We have a fairly new launch at the end of Greenfield Avenue on the south side, which is right near the School of Freshwater Sciences, which is an ADA accessible launch. We have that information kind of going through most of Milwaukee and Ozaukee County. There's also information about paddles. There's amazing paddles that you can do where you're starting up like in Lincoln Park and like heading downtown and ending at a brewery at a restaurant, which is a really great feature. but I also love paddling the Menominee Canals and, the Kinnickinnick River also is like very fun. There's a couple new businesses on the Kinnickinnick as well the Bridgewater being one of those that has a great pier. So lots of great opportunities.
You mentioned paddling, which I'm a big fan of. But if you're paddling down the Milwaukee River, let's say you're like right outside the old, where Rock Bottom Brewery used to be.
Right.
Like, and I fall in.
Yeah.
Like, talk to me about that. Like, that kind of worries me.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Like, obviously, I got to have a life jacket on to begin with.
Yes, life jackets
but
are huge.
It just, for some reason, doesn't seem as safe as it should be.
No, you're totally right. So I think one of the swimmable cities kind of tenets is, you know, clean, safe, and accessible. And I think what you're talking about gets to the safety and also maybe to the accessibility. But there are emergency ladders on a lot of the seawalls, and we've advocated for years for them to be fixed and replaced. They did go and do a lot of work on them last year. But it also just shows you we have a lot of really old seawalls, a lot of really old waterfront infrastructure, right? And so I think a big part of the Swimmable Cities Initiative is really, you know, building that plan and building in financing for future improvements. We are also working, the fire department started a really great initiative called Water Safe MKE, where they, because they are the first responders for a lot of the drownings in the river and on the lakefront, they're putting out a lot of these throw rings that people might be seeing, like they're the red throw rings along the riverwalk and along the beaches, really as a public safety initiative. But, you know, we are also working to try to work with the city, for example. We put in a couple grant applications to add like ladders to all of the stub end piers. So, like if you fall somewhere like Rock Bottom, those piers will have easier ladders that are attached to the piers.
To be integrated into the riverwalk design.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they do have emergency ones on the seawall. I will say, too, I've been here 23 years. Yeah. I've never used one of those ladders. Okay. And I think some of them end up, too, in portions of the riverwalk where there might be a lip or a fence where you might have to do some sort of matrix move to get over some of that infrastructure. So I think we do need to make a lot of improvements around. I think ladders would certainly help that are easier to use on the piers themselves, and we're working on that. But it is tricky. A lot of the kayak piers are also much easier as a swimmer to get off on, and we're trying to encourage a lot of the new piers that are coming in to be lower to the water and floatable and a little bit more accessible, not only for kayakers but also for swimmers and for kayakers who become swimmers.
Yeah, that's good.
Accidentally,
I like that. That's good progress. Yes. We'll be right back. I'm Jeff Sherman. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. So from the business side and from the real estate side, if you're sitting down with a room full of local developers and you're talking about riverfront design, lakefront design, what are some of the design choices and like some of the, I don't know, even policy initiatives from a business standpoint that can really make sense to help drive clean water?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. So, I mean, I think certainly if you're in like a downtown Milwaukee and you have a business where you could provide, you know, access to the river, that's obviously a huge priority. Yeah. We really appreciate businesses. Like Harley also recently put in a lower pier for kayakers at Motor. And so, you know, we're always advocating for safer access. I think as we were just talking about, too, safety ladders, providing mm-hmm. that kind of infrastructure is really important. You know, we have also other businesses like Sigma is a good example of this, where they don't really have a riverfront access per se, but they've put in a lot of green infrastructure and prairie kind of along their building front. So, and that really helps, you know, infiltrate that stormwater, treat that stormwater before it runs right into the river. We have a lot of, you know, city and MMSD guidelines around stormwater management okay. that we've continued to improve over the years, you know, to kind of try to get at that issue. But, you know, we certainly would engage, will encourage people to do as much stormwater, you know, management that they can, or green roofs if they're able to do that. You know, and I think MMSC cost shares a lot of that work in Milwaukee because it's such a priority for us to reduce that stormwater. You know, we've seen, like, we've had two really serious storms in the last 8-9 months, including a 1,000-year event and probably a well over 100-year event.
It's been some pretty solid flooding on the Milwaukee River.
Solid flooding, and we lost, I think, 1,800 houses were damaged in the city of Milwaukee by that August flood last year. So we, you know, I think what we've experienced in the past might not be, you know, predictive of what we're going to see in the future. And I think we might really have to expedite a lot of this stormwater management, you know, green infrastructure, all of that, I think, would be something that we'd encourage. I also, like, if folks, especially in different parts of the watershed, have the ability to naturalize the shoreline, we would love to see more of that. We have a lot of really, you know, steel, that a lot of our rivers were dredged, they were widened, they were hardened with those steel sheet piling walls. And, you know, they're pretty hostile for fish and wildlife. And so as part of this area of concern work, I should have said earlier, there's like dozens of habitat projects as well. So and a lot of that looks like removing invasive species, planting trees, planting native plants. But, you know, in some areas it could be, you know, trying to green these shorelines, trying to create more emergent plants, like kind of wetland plants. In the Burnham Canal, for example, there's a project to put in like wetland in there, which I think would be great for fishermen, be great for paddlers. And, you know, just to provide some more habitat in our really urban environments for fish to rest. The Grand Trunk area, too, which is really close to Barnacle Buds on the Kinnickinnick River. Okay. There's a project there that is going to hopefully, there's some complications right now with the design of that. But we are looking to put a wetland there that would also be recreational, but also like a fish and wildlife habitat. So I think, you know, to the extent that businesses could help with kind of trying to green those shorelines and not putting, you know, I think back in the day, the whole thing was like, let's put steel everywhere. Let's do as many pipes and get the stormwater to the river as quickly as possible. And, you know, and I understand why that happened, but it really just has increased flooding, increased pollution. And I think that we need to kind of rethink how we're doing a lot of our development in the future.
We'll be right back. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. As always, thank you, Horicon Bank. All the good community-minded people at Horicon Bank, we appreciate your support. What are you asking for of local officials, like on the city and county and even on the state level? I mean, is it additional funding? Are there different policy initiatives that you're working on?
Yeah, I think all those things. I mean, I think certainly we've talked to the city about trying to create a real plan for what it means to be swimmable. It is obviously can be very kind of a generic term, so we want to get really action oriented as to what that means. And I think some of it includes what we're just talking about, like better development standards, more money for green infrastructure. And I think, you know, the city's already doing, you know, I think a really good job. But we could always do more. And I think around, you know, we would love to see, you know, maybe not in a couple years or 5 years, but have some, you know, what you see in Europe, which are protected swimming areas in the rivers. I think that could be an achievable goal and a realistic one. They have this in a lot of, you know, if you go to Copenhagen or a lot of European cities, they have, and in Paris now, they literally have like a piered off or like a safe swimming area that's excluded from boat traffic with piers, where people can swim in the river. And we, and actually,
are you optimistic we could get to that point in
Milwaukee? I am optimistic we could get to that point. You know, we certainly have incredible beaches, right? We're lucky in that way. We just, the count is part of the area of concern work. South Shore Beach was moved last year to a new location, which is much improved for water quality. And that beach is being really well used and it's been really successful. We also have some projects that are going to be going on in McKinley. and Bradford beaches to improve swim mobility at those beaches. So we definitely have that as kind of a solid place to start. But I do think it's achievable to, you know, improve swimming in the river. We do have people swimming upstream in our rivers in places like West Bend and Mequon and even Lincoln Park. I see kids swimming up there all the time. So, you know, I think there are people using the rivers. And I think we have a lot of people downtown that, I mean, and I've met a lot of kids, too, with some of the education work we've done with MPS and others, where you meet kids that have never been to Lake Michigan. And, like, their only water that they can play in is close to their house, which might not be, you know, was likely a river. And in a lot of cases, people don't have the luxury to go up north to swim. They, you know, their swimming spot is, you know, the Menominee River.
Well, all the more reason we have to do the work that you're doing each and every day.
Yes, exactly.
A couple final questions for you, Cheryl. What's something that just on a pure citizen level that we can all do to improve the waterways? Is it simple cleanup? Is it phone calls? Like, well, what can we do to make sure that we reach the swimmable city's goal that you're reaching for?
Well, there's a lot that people can do. I mean, certainly if people can help with river cleanups, beach cleanups, that's very appreciated. You know, we just had a Guinness record breaking cleanup. I always have a hard time saying that. This spring, we had an incredible turnout, almost 5,000 volunteers this spring at our river cleanup. So that's very helpful. But I think, you know, to the extent that people can clean up like those stormwater drains in front of their house, you know, if you see trash at the drain in front of your house, that's connected to a river. Unless you're downtown Milwaukee and like the very, you know, downstream, or I should say south of Capitol and Shorewood, almost all of that stormwater goes directly into a river. So cleaning up the street in front of your house, cleaning up the storm drain, you know, putting in as many native plants as you can into your yard, you know, rain barrels, that does help kind of slow down that slug of water, especially when we have those really big extreme storm events, to help minimize all the water getting into the sewer at the same time. That often contributes to overflow. So the amount of the more water you can infiltrate on your own property is really important. Disconnecting your downspouts. You know, there's a lot of things that people can do. And I think, you know, really paying attention to, you know, the products that you're buying. It's really hard. A lot of we don't have a lot of choice when we go buy groceries. Almost everything comes in plastic nowadays. But, you know, to the extent that you can really reduce the amount of plastic you're using, using, you know, reusable bottles, reusable, you know, containers for food, for lunch, all those things I think do add up
and
will help for sure.
Finally, Cheryl, what's your you are the Milwaukee River Keeper. What is your favorite spot on the Milwaukee River?
I feel like it's asking me to like choose between my children, you know, like it's a lot of Sophie's choice. you know, I love the Milwaukee River Greenway. I was really involved in helping that that area become protected with the city. It's an like kind of an overlay district that protects the river, but that whole section from, you know, I'd say, you know, certainly Capitol to North, I hike a lot. But, you know, the entire Greenway goes from, like, Silver Spring to North Avenue. It's really incredible. You can do a big circle hike in there, and you really don't feel like you're in the city of Milwaukee. I also hike the Menominee a lot between, North and Capitol. I love that section.
That's a great point right there, that just the stretch of the river. Like, you feel like you're in 10 different cities as either you're kayaking or paddleboarding or running on the Riverwalk. Like, there's so much difference there that it's just amazing. That makes your work even more important.
Yeah, I mean, you can start in downtown Milwaukee and hike all the way up through the Greenway and where you really don't even see the city. And a lot of that was intentional. We really tried to keep it wild and with a lot of, you know, design standards that the city has pushed forth. So, yeah, we're really proud of that area, and it's just an incredible resource right in the middle of the city. Really fun for paddling, really fun, you know, hopefully for swimming.
We'll see you on the river this summer. Thanks for all the work you do and for sharing the vision with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Finally today, next week I'm going to take you into a conversation that kind of lit up my Threads feed. A few weeks ago, I tossed out a simple question. What should be the next big mural project in downtown Milwaukee? The answers were absolutely amazing. There's some big thoughts there and some big ideas. We're going to have that discussion next week on the show. But if you've kind of felt like, I don't know, the social media landscape has been like shifting a bit underneath your typing fingers on your phone or on your laptop, you're probably not imagining it. I saw this in the New York Times this week that Threads, which is the Twitter X competitor that Meta owns, is gaining a ton of momentum. It's pulling users, it's pulling creators, it's pulling news entities, and it's pulling a lot of the conversation away from what used to be like the default town square, which is Elon Musk's X, used to be Twitter. Last month, Meta said that Threads had amassed 500 million monthly users, a milestone that makes it as popular as X. Now, Meta also owns Facebook and Instagram, and they've really nurtured Threads to position it as a conversational space where news and politics are discussed, but they're not like the main draws. And you can really feel it on the platform. This is Connor Hayes, who is the head of Threads. He said the platform's intent is to follow the intent of users. It has a goal of reaching 1 billion users. Of course, he's going to say that. But if Threads reaches its target, it's going to be bigger than Snapchat, which has 556 million users, according to its financial filings. The way that we best describe what success looks like is that we want to be the largest and best platform for public conversation. And if you look at these conversations on the platforms, they're evolving, but they're still competing. So this is what doesn't change in social media. People are always looking for connection. They're looking for community, and they're looking for voices that they can trust. So if I can, I want to remind you that here at WTMJ, we're committed to showing up where you are. So right now, more and more of you are showing up on Threads. So follow us at 620WTMJ on Threads. If you don't have a Threads account, open one. It will be worth your while. Trust me. Follow WTMJ. You can follow me for more conversations and community, for more stories that maybe matter in your life. I'm at Jeff Sherman now. Because no matter the platform, the mission always stays the same, right, Jaslyn? We are here to help keep you connected. We'll see you on Threads, and we'll see you next week.